You're listening to Read Between the Letting with Aaron Heath
and Matt McInerney.
It's February 27th, 2009. Tonight we have our first guest, Antonio Corusone of Aisle 1.
We're going to be discussing Tropicana's packaging reversal.
We'll also talk about the Safari 4 beta and what it means for web design.
Matt and I also have a new site as a side project to discuss with some other updates for RBTO.
And finally, we have a prize to give away.
Stay tuned. All right, Antonio, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We're going to start by talking to Antonio a little bit. If you want to just introduce yourself, we've introduced you right before this with our pre-recorded bit, but if you want to talk a little bit about Aisle 1, the grid system, why it is you got into this, why it is you're doing this, and then we're going to go a little further and talk about grid systems in a bit.
Okay. My name is Antonio Carasone, graphic designer from New York City. I started Aisle 1 a few years ago. It kind of spawned off of a small company that a friend, me and my friends were trying to start up, like a little design firm. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do a blog. The design firm was called Bodega. And we kind of wanted to go with that theme, so we created this blog called Aisle 1, which would be some, you know, like a source of inspiration for us. We would post, you know, we started off posting anything. It was not only just graphic design and typography, it was just random things that kind of like was interesting to us.
Is the style that you post on Aisle 1, does that tend to be the style you design in?
My style is, when I can do it, it's very much like, you know, 60s Brockman and Crowell's, you know, very simple, minimal, you know, grid-oriented,
yeah.
A lot of Helvetica.
Yeah.
I think what I post on Aisle 1 reflects my design style.
How many subscribers do you have? I definitely subscribe in my Google Reader, and I'm sure a lot of other people do.
Yeah, I checked today, and I think today it's almost at 6,000.
Wow.
So it grows by the day, which is pretty impressive. I never expected this kind of like attention to the blog. It kind of started off as just me just posting stuff that almost like a little gallery just for myself, kind of like a found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, just people just started hearing about it, and you know, day by day, I just get more readers, which is great.
You know, that's kind of the way to do it, though. If you like it, other people are going to like it. You know, if you're doing something for yourself and just having this little foundry to pull things from, there's other people out there who are of course going to be interested in the same thing.
Yeah,
I found that too. It's just keep doing something that you really like doing, and other people kind of they can sense that. And they
gravitate
start to pick up on it.
Yeah. And then you started the gridsystem.org.
Yeah, I started the grid system. It launched, I think it was the end of November, early December. And it kind of, I can't remember exactly where the idea came from, but, you know, I use grids a lot, and I'm kind of like an advocate in my personal life, and I try to, you know, pass it along on the blog. On Aisle 1, and I noticed that there was no real good resource for grid systems, just, you know, for people who just never heard about them or really don't understand them. I want kind of to create a place where you could go and you could get articles, the, you know, downloadable templates, and just like a hub of sorts where, you know, people could educate themselves on grid system a little more, because especially in the design community, there's a terrible misconception when it comes to grids. A lot of designers are just scared to use them or consider them too strict.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand.
And
that's
you
a
know,
discussion
and I noticed there was there are these few bits and pieces around the web where you could find grid information. Like you could go to Subtraction, or then there was
Subtraction was a big one.
There was like Grid 960 for his templates, but there was never that information. I mean, you could go read books, but as far as a database online for that, it was hard to find.
And, you know, I hadn't heard about thegridsystem.org until recently, but I'm looking at it now. And, yeah, this is great that you have templates, you know, links to these templates up here and just a whole lot of information, really, just, like, compiled well.
Yeah, I just – before I launched the site, I kind of – I did, like, a massive search, and I tried to compile all a bunch of articles and tools and books and templates. Actually, most of the templates I just created myself because I couldn't find any good ones. But I still have, like, a huge backlog of articles that I still have to post.
Is that something that you plan to do? Do you plan to update it frequently, or let it be more of a resource where it has what it has, and every few months maybe a few updates?
I try to update it a couple of times a month because I do have a lot of articles that I could post. Mm. But in terms of, like, books, I actually have run out of books to post. Yeah. I keep searching for more books and books, but especially on grid systems, it's really hard to find. There aren't that many out there.
Yeah, I'm sure I have most of them too. You get the Brockman book, then you get Making and Breaking the Grid, and there are a few others that are kind of staples in the design community. But then after that, it's hard to find.
I mean, what are you going to do after that? You have your requirement, like the original Joseph Muller Brockman book. You have your modern day kind of, let's see what we can do with this kind of book, and a couple of example books. But after that, then it's more of articles coming out on the web. You know, it's an evolution.
Exactly. And, I mean, eventually I'm going to run out of stuff, and I think the site will still act as a
– Oh, it's still a great resource.
Well, yeah, even if you run out of stuff, any young designer can go on and find this backlog of information that's not – it's still relevant. It's still going to be relevant, of course.
Exactly.
One of the great things about the site, though, is just the tiny little touch that you're adding here with the show grid, hide grid up in the right corner, where people can actually click it and see all the CSS come up and the red lines. It's fun.
Yeah, that was actually the most difficult part of the entire project to actually get it consistent across. I did Safari and Firefox because I wasn't even going to bother with it.
Right.
It was a lot of work. I coded the entire site using EMS.
So it's all relative.
Yeah, to define the font sizes in CSS. But then I did some tests, and I found out that it's better if you want to keep things consistent on multiple browsers. It's better to use pixels instead to define the font size.
Interesting. You know, that's actually probably. Probably the best part of the site now is it really gets you thinking how well can grids be used in web design right now because of our limitations on code.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the reasons behind showing the grid. For one, I wanted to kind of use it kind of as an educational tool where, you know, beginners could come here and kind of see how the site was built and the structure behind it. But also, it was almost kind of a proof of concept because I've heard a lot of people saying it's almost impossible or it's very difficult to code a site to fall exactly on a grid system and a baseline grid.
The baseline grid, especially, I would imagine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the baseline grid was a pain, but you know, there's certain sites like on A List Apart, they had an article about lining up to baseline grids, and you know, they did it. So I kind of wanted to do a full site that proves that you can actually do this, and it does work, so which is great.
I think that you should next thing, go write an article about that, about the development. Have you written anything about that yet, the development process of the site?
No, I haven't. Actually, I've been thinking about that. But
what I always think is interesting about grids in the web is that just the structure of web design, grids are inherent. But they
not perfect.
They're not perfect. Exactly. It's very hard to be precise. But you kind of have to have a grid system just to, like, whether it was old school designing with tables. That's kind of a grid, or designing with div elements. They tend to stack into boxes, and they kind of have to.
Right. Well, it's a boxy language, you know. But we still don't have it perfectly down, and that's partially, I guess, because of browser compatibility. Talking about the difference between pixels and EMs, people's resolutions, and it's a mess right now. Hopefully, CSS3 might help and come and fix some of those things.
That would be great, or just people adopting something like WebKit or Mozilla. Hopefully, WebKit.
WebKit. Yeah,
that's just a personal preference.
Same here. I hope eventually there's just one standard rendering engine. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's kind of ridiculous that each browser is just different.
Well, since we're already talking about this, let's go ahead and jump to one of these other topics we were going to talk about tonight, and we can come back to this later. But sure. Safari 4 beta came out. You know, that's WebKit is rendering it. And Safari 4, have you? I know Matt's used it. Antonio, have you had a chance to use it yet?
Yeah, I've officially switched.
Yes.
Me too. I thought I was trying it the other day, and then I found out today I'm using it officially. So,
well, I've been a Safari fan forever. You know, everyone uses Firefox, and ever since I switched to a Mac, Safari renders, WebKit renders better. It's faster, in my opinion. But so Safari 4, here's what we're talking about. It's actually implemented HTML5 tags, some of them, and some CSS animation styles. When you actually launch Safari 4 for the first time, it's using those CSS animations, and it looks like a Flash video.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
I was blown away the first time I opened that. If that's what's possible with CSS in the future, JavaScript and Flash, maybe we won't need them anymore.
Apple has done it best with that intro because there's this one where it has these pictures of leaves floating down, and it's sluggish. It makes Safari 4 freeze up a little bit. I can't believe Apple did that. It was just lightweight, quick, and impressive, you know?
I gotta trash my preferences and get that back up.
There's a link. You can actually get to it at any time. I'll have to find it, but I think you can Google it at this point. But so that's Safari 4. That's the future of the web. Couple other things. Safari 4 introduced some great UI features, new user interface. The top sites. It's like the new homepage.
Oh yeah, I like that. I might even turn off my bookmarks bar because I'm starting to realize that every time I go to new bookmark, I first hit Command T. So I don't even really need them. And obviously visually kind of stunning.
It's nice. I didn't realize that the little blue star by it, I thought that meant it was a bookmark. Apparently that means the site's been updated since you last visited it.
Oh, I thought that meant bookmark too. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like using it now instead of my bookmarks. It's totally changing the way I'm surfing now.
It's all you need. And that's what I haven't seen Apple do something like that in a little while. And the fact that they did that, especially with something like Safari, I mean, it's good to see that they have this interest in these applications and the web still. You know, these new user interfaces, that this is something more than just eye candy. This isn't just cover flow. This is really usable.
Yeah, it's a whole new way of browsing, and I love it.
Well, we applaud you, Apple. You know,
graphic designers talk about how they love Apple. Shocking.
All right.
How do you guys feel about the tabs?
It for the first like hour, I would miss them, but I'm starting to get it. I'm on day two, and I'm pretty used to them actually now.
I agree, and I think that's what I've been seeing on all these social networks. People are saying the exact same thing. They're at first, and then you're fine with it. And, you know, here's the other thing. I feel like I just had to accept it because 10.6, Snow Leopard, all of Apple, this is going to be their new interface. They're all going to have tabs at top.
Yeah, I was reading about that.
So just got to get used to it.
And I like it because the entire idea of tabs is that the manila folders with the tabs on top. It looks like that now. That's what tabs are.
And it saves screen real estate, a nice little chunk.
Yeah, I totally think this system makes a lot more sense because now you don't have the tabs within the content area. It's actually working as a tab should work. And what I think people are confusing themselves with is they're not seeing this as multiple windows stacked upon each other. They're still trying to view it as one window with just tabs that you just go through. And I think that a lot of people, it's bugging them and they're just freaking out over it.
And I think everyone will get over their being bothered with it when this starts to be universal. Because I'm sure in Snow Leopard we're going to see this in Finder.
Very true.
And then we'll all just say, oh, that's what tabs should be now. Yeah. It's just a small transition period, I think, that it'll bump
into. You know, it's pulling out the floppy drive and saying, you don't need a floppy drive, in 6 months you'll thank us.
Exactly.
speaking of these changes, Tropicana, a PepsiCo product, they introduced some new packaging by the world-famous Arnell Group, which we talked about in Episode 2 with that leaked brand document. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion about the new packaging. Do you guys want to talk about that first?
Well, here's what I thought of the new packaging, is that on its own, it looks pretty good. But in the context of a grocery store, it's I walked by it in Publix and completely confused it for the generic brand. So, you know, if you're designing in a vacuum, it's great. But when you design with when context in mind,
I kind of disagree with that. Cause
do you?
I personally love the new redesign. I think the only flaw in it is that they didn't. They didn't keep the iconic
the straw.
Yeah. Orange with the straw in it, yeah. But other than that, I think the main issue here is that just consumers have just become lazy. And when they're at a supermarket, they're so used to the old design that they don't even think about it anymore. They just look, you know, they see the orange for no pulp, they see the green for some pulp.
They like that, but it's easy to just pop right away, green, blue, red, this is what the kind is. And, I mean, yeah, you could change the colors and you could say – or you could change that icon system, that wayfinding system. But they kind of almost completely took it away in the new packaging, didn't they?
I don't think they took it away. It's still there at the top. It's obviously small, and I agree that the older design, you know, at a quick glance, it works a lot better because, you know, you have that top area that has, it's a big block of color.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's just, you know, if consumers just for a moment just stopped and looked at it and actually read the packaging, it wouldn't be confusing at all.
You kind of need to catch the attention, and if you don't, aren't you failing? Because you're competing with other designs. And if your design can't compete and can't catch the attention, then of course nobody's going to look at it. And I was looking at the colors. They just muted them, and they made them more similar so they look good next to each other, but they don't stand out. Antonio, what do you think of that idea? Is that failing, or do you really just think the consumer needs to pay more attention to the brand?
Whose obligation is it, basically?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's the consumers. Well, you know, from a branding standpoint, I think if it was a smaller brand, I would understand. But this is Tropicana. When you think of orange juice, you immediately think of Tropicana. I don't think that they're having any problems there where they have to compete necessarily. But I guess, you know, at a supermarket, you know, when you quickly glance at something, I could see how the older design would work a lot better. But I don't necessarily think that makes the design better.
Okay.
That's a really interesting concept. And here's I was having a great discussion today with Jason Fraser. He's a professor here at SCAD, kind of about that. And talking about, you know, you really start to see the subjectivity in design in this. What he was saying was he was in – and I've heard this from a lot of people actually. He was in Sam's Club and he was walking by and at first glance he thought, oh, Sam's Club is redoing their packaging. This looks much better. And then he realized it was Tropicana and he thought, this looks much worse for Tropicana. You know, which is so interesting because – It is an excellent job. It is very nice and clean looking. I wish more packaging looked like the new Tropicana packaging, but I don't know if I wish the Tropicana packaging looked like the new Tropicana packaging. You know, it's well designed, but I don't know. It's a little generic, and maybe that's
I agree. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons why I love it so much. It's so clean. It's so simple.
I bet they can make it clean and still kind of like what you were saying. If they would have kept the iconic orange with the straw instead of that stupid glass of orange juice, just a plain glass of orange juice there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I agree. If that image was there, I think a lot of people would have reacted differently to it.
Actually, you know what? I reacted totally different to it in my web browser and in the grocery store. At first glance, I saw it on brand new, just on my feed reader, and I thought, oh, that is a really nice
looking
packaging.
But see, you were reacting as a graphic designer in your web browser and as a consumer.
Exactly. Then when I went to the Publix, I really thought it was Publix, and I just thought they completely lost their edge of being premium orange juice. Like, that's their angle. They completely lost it, and I just passed it by, and they lost my dollar because of design.
That's interesting.
You know, Ed, like we said, like if Publix came out with that or some other grocery store, they could gain your dollar because of design. And it's just it's such an interesting flip side. The one thing they are doing, they're going to go back to their old packaging, but they are keeping the new cap because the new caps on
the
packaging.
That's true.
Yeah, go ahead. Do you guys want to talk about that?
I love the new cat. I think it's excellent. I'm glad they're keeping it.
It's rounded like an orange. It's poofed out instead of just like a flat kind of cylinder.
Yeah, but it also has little dimples in it as well.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. That's going to save them money. They probably have Professor Fox's. They probably have like 9 million of them laying around. So if they have to go back to the old packaging, at least they can use these.
Well, that's something to remember when they make a decision like this. How many of those new packages do they print? Like, this costs them a lot of money.
You know what, though? I'm sure that they're going to put those into the – because if they're sold nationwide, in a month's time, they're probably out of those packages. They've probably sold through them. So
that's probably true.
I'm saving mine.
It'll be on eBay in 20 years.
What's funny is that today I told my wife that they're going back to the old packaging, and she does most of the shopping in the household, and her immediate reaction was, "Oh no, are you kidding me?"
Really?
And she's like, "It's so clean, it's so nice, I love it."
you've been around her for a while.
I think I'm brainwashing.
You know what? I think that's interesting. Here, this might be the difference. If you don't normally buy Tropicana, and you just buy whatever orange juice, you lose the Tropicana catching your attention. But if you do buy Tropicana on a standard basis, maybe you like the packaging design because they don't have to grab you. You're walking in to buy it anyway.
The other thing is I just like changes because I'm interested in them. As a consumer or a graphic designer, if something changes, even if it changes for the worst, at first I'm going to be like, oh, it changed. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. Just for the fact that it's new.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same way. A lot of people are just totally terrified with change. You know, we saw with the Safari 4 beta, a lot of people immediately were just, I'm uninstalling this. It's freaking me out. I can't get used to it. And they really didn't give it a chance. And I think in some instances, in certain brands, you need a change. But I think, for instance, Pepsi, I think a change there was just totally – it was a change for the bad, in my opinion.
I agree with that. We spent episode one talking about this, and I think we did end up at the conclusion that the new Pepsi logo, it brought in a lot of negative reaction for a pretty good reason.
Maybe Pepsi will sponsor us. We've talked about them almost every episode.
But maybe they'll sponsor us with Coke. Like, they shouldn't like us.
Yeah.
The Tropicana packaging idea, how analogous is that to that Chip Kid story? Here, I'll explain the context. We were at a lecture for famous book designer Chip Kid, and he was talking about designing a book for Cormac McCarthy, the guy who wrote No Country for Old Men.
The Road.
And they went through a ton of covers, and they were talking about all kinds of fancy stuff they could do. They could do embossing, or they could do foil printing. And they went through a million revisions, and they couldn't get anything they wanted. So in the end, they ended up with this black, just all black cover with a little bit of type that says, The Road, Cormac McCarthy. And it was just kind of like, okay, you see it there. We saw it on the big projector screen. We're like, okay, all right. But then he talked about walking into Barnes & Noble and seeing all the books with foil printing and embossing and die cutting, and then you just see this giant black cover that says The Road.
Just a vortex.
And it stood out amongst everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so does this stand out?
I think this is the opposite of that story. The Tropicana is doing the opposite thing.
Well, I mean, it's still better design than half the crap you see out there at generic brands.
Oh, absolutely. So. Yeah. It's just back to context. It's just, a lot of it is the context of where you're putting your design work.
It's very true.
Yeah, I wonder if they did any kind of – I'm sure they did any kind of testing where they actually simulated a shelf or went to an actual supermarket and just put the new design in there with a bunch of other products and see how it stood out.
I would hope so. I would as for PepsiCo and Arnell Group, I would hope so. That's all we have.
Well, maybe
you never know.
Maybe they test the gravitational pull of their packaging.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a callback to episode one.
Getting back to grid systems, Matt, you had a really good question to ask Antonio about.
Oh, yeah. We were – Aaron and I were talking beforehand, and I was wondering what your relationship to the grid is and how – are you of the
of the mindset.
Are you of the mindset that you need a grid and it's pivotal, or you could take or leave a grid and it's just another form of structure?
It's a tool.
I would say I need it.
Okay.
I think that for me personally, whenever I design something without a grid, it just lacks something. I work in advertising, and a lot of times there's just no time for me to actually sit down and develop a well-designed grid system for a project. So I just kind of eye it, which I hate. I absolutely hate doing.
You're coming out on the show.
I hate eyeing it. I used to eye it all the time until I found grid systems. But those designs, whenever I look at them, I immediately, it lacks something. It just doesn't have that extra detail that a design with a grid would have.
Do you ever make it yourself a grid just so you can specifically break it to do something different?
Not really. I mean, I don't break the grid that much. Mm-hmm. I stick with it a lot. I've read making and breaking the grids, and I've read a lot of articles about breaking the grid, and those are great concepts. I mean, most of the stuff I do at work is, it's a lot of it's heavy advertising, so it's a lot of emails, a lot of microsites, and a lot of banners. And for instance, banners, it's really difficult to use a grid for a banner, mm-hmm. especially something that's 300 by 250. But wherever I could use it, even in emails. Recently, I've been using grid systems when designing emails, and I think it's worked great.
Interesting.
One thing I'm starting to find interesting about grids is that even people that don't design with grids, oftentimes you can draw a grid on top later and realize the way their mind is working is just the way you have to design sometimes is you have to apply structure. Or, I mean, that's what it is.
Well, structure comes from everything. Yeah,
absolutely. The before I discovered grids, that's kind of how I designed. I eyed everything. I would do it by eye, but mm-hmm. it would all have some kind of
relationship,
like structure. Yeah, everything had relationship. Everything lined up. And when I learned about grid systems, it immediately made sense to me, because I think I was always looking for something behind my designs that would give meaning to everything. Like, I hated, I used to hate just positioning something there just because it looked right.
Yeah.
With a grid system, you have a foundation, you have a reason why, that line of text is 10 pixels below that image, or, why the measure of that copy block is 250 pixels wide. With a grid system, there's a whole reason behind it, and I think that kind of brings a design to the next level.
Well, whenever you're working with type, there's always going to be kind of this inherent hierarchy, and if it's not there, then something doesn't look right, and you know it. And so out of that, of course, there's with content comes structure. There has to be some sort of structure. Usually, a lot of times, especially if you're trying to communicate, it's, I would say, in advertising, especially because you're trying to communicate something that can be communicated.
And on the line of type having this inherent grid structure, I think it's also interesting to point out that we're in a much different time with type than when you originate type, because when you're building metal type, you have to have a grid because you have physical constraints. Actually, I think this is probably the problem with grids in web design, is that we don't have any inherent structures anymore with a screen. Well, I mean, a pixel can be a grid structure, but you don't see it, so you mm-hmm. don't necessarily know to use it. Whereas if you build a design with your hands in essentially a box, you can see the horizontal and vertical lines creating this grid.
Well, yeah, and with that, you have like you were saying, the physical constraints. You have this 8.5 by 11 page that is physically there that everyone will touch. We're making so many assumptions on the web about how many pixels there are, where they are, things like that. I wonder how the web is going to develop these grids. What is it? The making and breaking the grid. It calls it what kind of grid does it call it?
I can't remember.
It's kind of bullshit. You know, basically it's basically saying if you put some lines over a website, you can see a grid on it, which is true, but that doesn't make it – I mean that's not – it doesn't need a specific name for that grid. You know, it's not a modular – it's not like a modular grid or a column grid. It's a grid out of divs.
Yeah, a grid is a grid in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how – you know, especially web design and like magazine design and book design, you just feel that, you know, that grid systems and design in and of itself just kind of almost came from the same place and kind of grew from each other. Mm-hmm. Especially in magazine designs, you know, columns, everything is all structured in a nice clean grid. And I think to me it just makes sense how, you know, whenever you look at a design, I immediately see a grid in it. Even if it wasn't designed on a grid, I could tell, you know, when you have things lined up, and even things to, you know, things should be lined up because the eye, that seems more pleasing to the eye.
You know, I know that every episode I do this, but I read a study. There's a study about this. The human mind inherently tries to find pattern and reason in anything, even if none exist. It will find it and it will make it. And you have to wonder, you know, as designers, how much of it when we're doing something, even if we're being chaotic, even if we're you know, Jackson Pollocking a page. It's not all random. We make random. You know, in random 3-2-2-3-2-2. There's your pattern. There's still something there.
I think the eye naturally creates a grid. I mean, for instance, now I have my top sites on Safari. I'm looking at all the sites here, and I can see in each and every one of them. I can see a grid. I can easily tell where the grid is, even if it wasn't designed.
Oh yeah,
Aaron sent me a link before the show, and I'm just looking at the page, and it's definitely there. I think this site might have had a grid system. As its basis, but even if it didn't, I can draw the lines with my eye and see the beginning and end of every horizontal and vertical line.
And it's just a tool to organize information. And there's plenty of times where you need to organize that information in that way. And it's thank God for alignment.
And
thank God.
but even when we talk about stuff like motion. When you try to bring motion into a design, it's basically you creating a line for someone else to see. When you know, maybe like if you did like a David Carson kind of design, even he's creating lines for you to see, even if it seems jumbled.
Well, it might not be
a straight line, it might be curved, but your eye's passing along a line because that's how you read.
Well, that's like the Gestalt principles, you know, like the Gestalt principle of closure and things like that. And yeah, it exists. It makes things more interesting when you don't obviously do it. You know, you have these alignment points that aren't – there's not a line going down them, but you can clearly see this alignment of type here. It just – not only are you creating structure, you're creating interest. You're creating tension. You're creating – you're working – you're moving your space. You're molding it. The fact that it all works together so well, it's kind of a miracle and wonderful in itself. How much of this did we actually do? How much of this do designers do? And how much of it is this kind of an inherent beauty that we've just seen around us, you know, not through media, but through nature that we take and say, this is how it should be. I want order in my life. Or
what's interesting, it's like anytime a new movement starts or a new generation starts, almost every new movement starts seems to take it back to nature first and then go from there. Like you think about like architectural movements of like the early 20th century, a lot of people that were trying to change up architecture went back to nature first, looked for the structure in nature, and trying to find out where should we go based on that. Because there's this inherent, I think it's probably more human beings than actual nature, but there's this inherent structure to everything that we see.
Yeah,
exactly, and that's one of the reasons why. The golden ratio works so well in design. You know, it creates proportions that are just that are just more pleasing to the eye because it's something that the eye is used to in nature. Because the golden section is pretty much everywhere. It's, you know, it's
yeah, like in the body, in the shell of a conch or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but and the other thing is that there's plenty of, you know, types of design and art that you can make. You can make chaos out of structure as well. I think there's – I think that if you look at anything, there's structure and chaos and there's chaos and structure. And, you know, that's kind of like a – that's again, that's kind of like a BS statement. Well, what does that mean, Aaron? But it's kind of going back to one of the earlier episodes when we ended up just saying, in a way, things just are. We can talk about them all we want, but the best part about it is enjoying them for what they are, as opposed to overanalyzing it.
Matt, I don't know how to follow up. Things just are.
All right, a couple of other announcements and updates. Matt and I recently started this site, typeaholism.com. Matt, do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, I coded it. So it's a site that uses Twitter hashtags, which are putting a little number sign in front of a word. And the hashtag we use is typeaholism. And it's obviously a joke for people who have an addiction to type.
Me?
Yeah, I think everyone talking right now. And basically, if you just tweet, you should tweet symptoms of typeaholism. Like, for example, if I see something set in Comic Sans, I don't trust it. Tag it typeaholism, and then it'll list it on typeaholism.com. And hopefully it'll give graphic designers and typographers a laugh.
It's kind of a little viral marketing campaign for us. But even if you don't use Twitter, it's actually starting to get used as a tag that people are tagging websites and interesting links in. Actually, Antonio, you've done it a few times.
Yeah, I started using it today. I love it.
It's great. Because I check it now to see, you know, type news.
You can start to go on now and you can look at pictures on TwitPic of people taking iPhone pictures of type that they like or hate. Actually, didn't you do this, Antonio, where you took – was that you who did bad wedding?
Yeah, I was in a parking garage and I just saw it and I was like, I got to put this up.
That's great.
But I think it – because I started going here today and I just started refreshing, you know, every couple of hours just to see what was new. And I think it would be great if you guys add, I don't know, maybe an RSS feed or something where you could just – I could instantly get this. And
I can put it out as an RSS feed because it basically the way it works is it pulls in an RSS feed from Twitter that displays those hashtags. So I'll just display a link to that and put it back out if you want to subscribe.
And did you already say where the phrase came from?
Oh, yeah. And we can credit ilovetypography.com. John from that site coined it and did a little funny article. I think it was a while ago. I think 6 months, a year ago, something.
It's on the sidebar if you go to the site. Yeah. But speaking of John from I Love Typography, he's also donated a book to us, The Elements of Typographic Style by Robert Bringhurst.
And if you don't know the book, it's like the go-to book for a typographic referencing. Like everything you want to know about the rules of type, it's in there. It's like – actually, I have it right here. It's like 320 pages of type goodness.
So what we're going to do is to encourage some more calls to us, call our number. We're going to give it next week, right?
Oh, give the book away? Yeah.
Yeah. So next week, to the best voicemail, whether it's a question, a comment, anything, the best voicemail, and it's kind of subjective, yes, but all the more reason to leave a couple of great voicemails. Leave your best voicemail to 646-402-5686, extension 20248. Leave your name and – go ahead.
I was going to say, just make sure to leave your email address or some way we can get in touch with you if you win, because if you don't, we – we'll have to
we're going to go to the next one, yeah. And again, thanks to John from I Love Typography for that. Let's see, other updates.
We all love John.
Yeah. He's been great to us. Talking about us on Twitter, and we've got a few listeners for that. And thank you very much, John.
Yeah, John's awesome.
Yes. Hopefully we'll have him on sometime.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I want to thank – who I picked up a new mic, so hopefully our sound quality is a little better. We're testing, you know, we're trying out. We're on a different system this time. We're not using Skype like usual, so there might be some artifacts in this one. We're working on it. You know, we get one thing better, we get one thing worse. So just give us a little bit of time. I want to thank Morten Ivland. He is the designer of Bolda Display. He's very nice to us. Next week, we're hopefully going to have someone from another website on. I don't want to say who yet,
in case it falls through.
But I'm really excited to have him. Any other updates on the site, on us?
I think that's all the news we have for the site. So I'll say, Antonio, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much. We had a great episode.
No problem, man. Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
Is there anything else you want to add? Go ahead, plug your sites.
IM1.net, thegridsystem.org. Check it out. Actually, you know, it's still in the works, but there might be a grid system book coming out that's kind of like an extension.
Ooh, excellent.
So it's still – I'm still pitching it to a publisher, and we're working with them. But, you know, hopefully it gets done. And if it does, you know, I'll definitely announce it, and I'll let everyone know.
Fantastic. We'll have to have you come back and talk about it when it does come out.
Definitely.
And that's it for RBTL Episode 4.
You can find us online at readbetweentheletting.com.
And feel free to contact us via email, comments, or our phone number.
Once again, I'm Matt.
And I'm Aaron. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Here's one of our first bloopers.
It's February 27th, 2009. 3...